Chester. This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Voter ID laws have been controversial across the country, and New Hampshire has been no exception. Last year, after a tough fight that included a veto override, the Republican-led legislature passed a law requiring voters to present photo ID at the polls or sign an affidavit swearing they are who they say they are. Supporters called this a safeguard against voter fraud. Critics called it unnecessary and even harmful to the democratic process. The law included several phases, bringing in stricter requirements over time, for instance, narrowing the list of allowable IDs starting this September. But when House Democrats came into power in January, they wasted little time trying to reverse this. Although an attempt to repeal the law outright failed, a compromise bill repealing the next phase of the law passed. The Senate is next to take up these issues, and today in The Exchange, we revisit voter ID and whether or not our law should be revised. Let's hear from you. How much of an impact did this new law have at your polling place last fall, if any? And what about the arguments around this? Is it appropriate to require people prove their identities before voting or not? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page. We have two guests with us in studio. David Pierce is here, Democratic State Senator from Aetna, former member of the House Election Law Committee. And Senator Pierce, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you very much, Laura.
And also with us, Sean Jasper, Republican State Representative from Hudson and a member of the House Election Law Committee. And Representative Jasper, welcome back to you, too. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Well, then I'm going to start with you, Representative Jasper, if I could. Why did you and your colleagues in the last legislative session feel a big change was needed to New Hampshire's voter ID laws?
Well, this has actually been a very long discussion about the need for voter ID. And it's something that really angers a lot of voters when they go to vote and find out that there's no proof of identity required. Like, why aren't you asking for my ID? Why can anyone just walk in and give a name and vote? And that's something that's been an issue for many years. I've been working the polls since I was 18. I was town moderator, school district moderator, and as selectman continued to work the polls virtually every election. So I'm very familiar with these issues. And that was the number one issue that people brought forward, the feeling that there was not security at the voting place.
So as somebody who worked in elections locally for a long time, this has bothered you for a long time.
It has.
This was part of a national movement too, wasn't it? Since the mid-2000s, lots of states started passing these laws.
Yeah, it's been an issue for 4 decades.
Why do you think, Senator Pierce, Democrats have often opposed these laws? What's the problem in your opinion?
Well, in the way the election laws work, there's always going to be a tension between deterring fraud on one side and making sure that every qualified voter on the other side is permitted to vote. And that's where the tension is. That's where the tug and pull comes. And I and typically the Democratic Party comes on down on the side that everyone who's qualified to vote should be able to vote without imposing these artificial barriers to get them to vote. And that's why I've always argued that these photo ID laws are not about deterring fraud, but they're about suppressing the vote.
Now, everyone who's qualified to vote, you said, should have the right to vote. But how do you determine if they're qualified or not if they don't have an ID?
Well, let's look at what the photo ID law does. All it does, in theory, is deter or prevent impersonation fraud. There are many types of fraud that can be perpetrated in the election system. There are many points along in the election process through which fraud can be accomplished. And this photo ID law does nothing to all of those other points. And so that's why I think it is more about voter suppression than it is about actually deterring fraud. If you look at it, the law that they passed in the last session does nothing about proving your identity when you vote by absentee ballot. You don't have to prove who you are.
So there's a hole there.
There's a hole there. And so if the whole purpose of the law, and we have such a big problem with impersonation fraud, then let's address the whole problem. The AG, Attorney General's Office, and the Secretary of State's Office have consistently testified year after year after year that there is no incidence, there are no incidents of voter impersonation fraud going on in New Hampshire. So even though Representative Jasper says it's been a big problem, what the problem is that we have a perception of fraud. We don't have evidence of fraud. And the basic question comes down is, do we enact public policy based on a misperception of what's going on, or do we enact public policy based on the facts?
Representative Jasper, could you respond to that, please? Because when this law was being debated last year, this came up a lot, that this is a solution in search of a problem. What do you think?
Well, I think we don't really know for sure what the issue is. And I want to start with the issue of qualified to vote. And you asked the question, how do you prove you're qualified to vote? Where I differ with some of my Republican colleagues may be that I don't think there's a lot of people coming in claiming to be somebody who's already registered to vote. I don't think that is a huge issue. While it could happen, and certainly we had the one case of the son claiming to be the father, we don't really know where any issues are because we've never really looked for voter fraud. And while I respect what Senator Pierce says about, you know, trying to solve every problem that exists, and I agree there are many areas of potential, this is the legislature. The reality is we rarely are able to take a whole bite, get the whole apple at once. We have to take it piece by piece, so we go to the most obvious. Voter fraud is as easy as 1, 2, 3 in New Hampshire right now, but it's at the registration because a person can come in, claim to be Sean Jasper, and you say, well, do you have any ID? No. We'll sign this affidavit. Well, where do you live? I live at 83 Old Dairy Road in Hudson. Do you have any proof? Well, no, I don't. We'll just sign this affidavit. Well, do you have proof that you're a citizen? Well, no, I don't. Okay, sign this affidavit. Then that person votes, walks away, and you send out the cards, which actually I was—
These are the follow-up cards that the Secretary of State's
office has to send. Which used to go out, but there was no requirement for them to be sent back. I sponsored the bill, which actually passed through the Democratic legislature, to require the cards to come back. This is where we're going to find out. You're going to hear, I understand, from the Secretary of State, Deputy Secretary of State, about the cards. There are a lot that came back as undeliverable, that didn't come back. These are the areas where it's going to show, because it's the first time we've actually ever looked to see if people are registering, signing these affidavidates.
And telling the truth. And we're going to talk to Dave Scanlon from the Secretary of State's office in a couple minutes. But let me just see if I hear you right, Representative Jasper. Are you saying the biggest problems or potential for fraud is not with the voting process, but with the registration process?
I believe that's where the biggest potential is. Senator Pierce is absolutely right about people requesting absentee ballots. But the reality, again, is there are very few cases where somebody has requested an absentee ballot and then somebody's shown up and said, hey, wait a minute, that's not my signature. I didn't request that. The potential exists. But that's something that I think is fairly well regulated now. The real issue have been all these qualified voter affidavits that we just don't know.
All right. And again, I want to definitely ask both of you about the affidavits, how this process works, and we're getting into some of the details, but it's important. The number for you to join us with your thoughts is 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, we are revisiting New Hampshire's voter ID law that passed last year. Now a House bill looks to put the brakes on some of the stricter provisions of this law, scheduled to take effect later this year. The phone number for you to join us with your questions, comments, or thoughts is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like. Keep them short. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. How much of an impact did this law have at your polling place last fall? Do you agree that Granite Staters should have to prove their identities before being allowed to cast ballots or not? Also, what do you think might strike the right balance between verifying voters are who they say they are, but not discouraging them from coming out on election day? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. voteaccess.org. So let's get into, guys, where we're at now. And David Pierce, in as layperson-ish a way as possible, where are we at now with this law? If I had to vote tomorrow, what would I have to do?
Well, the legislature, when it passed the voter ID law back in 2012, they passed it in two parts, what we're referring to as phase one and phase two. Phase one went into effect on September 1st, 2012, and it's what the law that was in place at the November elections last year. And it included a long list of acceptable forms of proof of identity. And then phase two of it is was caused by in a committee of conference in the legislature, and this is getting in the weeds a little bit, I'm sorry, but where then Speaker O'Brien came in and insisted on a list of more draconian, more exclusionary procedures. So where we are right now is we have phase one, which I could have supported, that came over from the Senate.
So there's a long list of allowable IDs, flexibility there for voters. And what happens if people don't have any ID at all? There's an affidavit process, right?
Yeah, they execute an affidavit. And as Sean has said, they are followed up with by the Secretary of State in the AG's office. Under phase two, which goes into effect September 1st of this year, the number of IDs shrinks from – or not IDs, but forms of proof of identity – shrinks down from 8 in phase one down to 4 in phase two. And that's why I maintain the position that this is not about deterring fraud. It's about suppressing the vote.
And what happens with the affidavit process? Does that get tougher, too, in phase two?
It's still there. But what happens is if you look at the list, for instance, in phase one, any valid photo identification issued by federal, state, county, or municipal government is permitted as a form of proof. Phase two eliminates that. Phase one says a valid student identification card. Phase two eliminates that. And phase one says if you're known by a local election official, which in small towns in New Hampshire, that's always the case, just about. Phase two eliminates that.
All right. We will talk more after a short break. Representative Jasper, definitely want your thoughts. And we'll start taking your calls and emails, too. I have a couple emails here that I want to share with you. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. And we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on revisiting voter ID on the exchange. At 11 o'clock this morning, NHPR will offer live coverage of the memorial service for the victims of the Boston Marathon bombings, where President Obama will be speaking. That's at 11 this morning here on NHPR. Partly sunny for most of today. Some high clouds moving in this afternoon. Highs from 50 degrees from the mountains toward the Canadian border. 55 degrees in the Connecticut River Valley area, Lakes region, and Monadnock region over toward Concord. And 65 degrees in southern sections of the state and along the seacoast. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Unity Homes from Benson Wood, designed to improve the world by enhancing quality of life and reducing energy consumption. Information at unityhomes.com. And Capital Center for the Arts in Concord presenting Steve Earle and the Dukes with special guest The Mastersons, Thursday, May 2nd at 7:30 p.m. Tickets at ccanh.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're revisiting the debate over New Hampshire's relatively new voter ID law. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Your questions, comments, personal experiences with this new law are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Senator David Pierce, Representative Sean Jasper, before we go to our listeners, I did want to have you follow up, Representative Jasper, on some of the things that Senator Pierce said, talking about the difference between phase one of this law, where, you know, you've got a affidavit process. If you don't have an ID, you swear you are who you say you are. You've got a pretty big list of valid IDs. Phase two, Senator Pierce, is where he's having a problem, a smaller list of IDs, making it tougher to vote. In fact, he even said suppressing the vote. What do you think?
Well, I actually agree with Senator Pierce on the issue of shrinking the list.
I don't think 8 IDs down to 4.
Right. I don't believe that it should be. As a matter of fact, an amendment that I put put forth an election law and on the floor of the House would have retained the phase one identifications. Because all we're talking about is people showing up to get a ballot. All we're trying to do at that point is match a face to a name. And so the idea that somebody's going to go out to the parking lot and figure out that John Smith hasn't voted, so he's going to go make an ID with John Smith's name and come in and hope that in the interim John Smith hasn't voted, it's a little ridiculous. So, again, my focus is more on the registration and the taking of the picture of people who don't have proofs of ID because, as I explained in the 1-2-3, if you're going to commit voter fraud, that's where you do it because there's no trail currently if you give false information.
At the registration process?
At the registration process. But once you've already registered and you've already proven who you are, now all you're doing, you're already on the checklist. And frankly, for me, as someone who worked elections, I stopped working as a ballot clerk because my spelling's terrible. And some of the names, people will come up and say their name very quickly. And I could spend several minutes with someone trying to figure out where they were on the checklist. It is so much easier. And this is what the ballot clerks in my town said to me. It was so much easier because they showed the name. All you had to do was match the name on the checklist. That's, to me, the primary purpose, and it gives people a feeling of security.
One more question, and then I do want to go to our listeners, and this is for you, Senator Pierce. You said a moment ago that you're concerned that this phase two, this tougher phase of the voter ID law, amounts to voter suppression. Do you think that this is a conscious effort to suppress a vote?
Absolutely. I mean, let's take student IDs, for instance.
Because that's a pretty big charge.
It's a true charge. Because under phase one, student IDs are an acceptable form of proof. So on August 31st, 2013, when phase one is still in effect, a student can bring her student ID and vote, assuming there's an election that day. On the very next day, September 1st, 2013, assuming there's an election that day, the student could bring the exact same ID and it wouldn't work. So either that card is sufficient proof of identity or it's not. And it can be also shown through another absurdity of the thing is because, and I appreciate Sean's focus on the registration process, but that really isn't at issue with this law. We're talking about obtaining a ballot. But another absurdity there is that a student, and I represent Hanover, which includes Dartmouth College, is that a student can bring in her student ID and register to vote on the same day of the election. And under phase two, her student ID would be sufficient to prove her identity, to register to vote. She takes that registration 10 feet over to the ballot clerk and say, okay, here's my student ID to prove my identity, and the exact same card, and the ballot clerk says, no, I'm sorry, that doesn't prove your identity. And so the student says, well, it worked there 10 feet across the room, but it's not working here. That's absurd. And we should know that that really comes as no surprise because former Speaker O'Brien, whose bill really this phase two is, was caught on tape on YouTube as saying we can't let students vote. And it's been a concerted effort to keep students.
Let's bring our listeners into our conversation. A lot more to untangle here. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's Christopher in Manchester with an email. He says, speaking anecdotally as a ward moderator, I don't think this is necessarily as black and white a partisan issue as it's been portrayed. A lot of moderate Democrats I've heard from at the polls think the current law is reasonable. Despite initial concerns, we had very few problems in November. What do you think about that, Senator Pierce? He's okay with this.
And that's been the thrust of what I've been saying this morning.
That this phase one is okay.
That this phase one is fine. It's the phase two, which is the problem. It's the phase two, the limiting of the number of IDs is a big problem. And I'm thrilled to hear Representative Jasper agree with that. And hopefully we can work together on some legislation about that point. Because phase one, the emailer is correct that it didn't cause huge problems at the polls this time. But I think that also shows a bit of an absurdity on the proponents of phase two, is that if it works, if phase one works so well in November of 2012, then why are we changing it? Why are we changing it to make it work less well? And so that's something that we have to really look at.
Real quick, Representative Jasper, what do you think about that?
Well, I think there were problems with the initial bill. And every time we pass a law, we go back and revisit it. My amendment, which does in that section exactly what Senator Pierce wants, garnered 100% of Republican support in the House.
Keeps, again, to reiterate, keeps eight IDs available to people.
Correct. So we have no disagreement there. The Republicans voted for my amendment. You know, as I said, every Republican who was present that day voted for my amendment. So we have no disagreement there. We have absolute common ground in that area.
What about the affidavit process and whether it's enough to sign or whether the clerk needs to take your picture? That's
well,
been
that,
some concern.
That is one of the sticking points. We feel very strongly, and unfortunately, it's going to take some time for the AG to get through all these investigations. So there may be some sense in saying, let's just put off phase two, any part of phase two, until the Attorney General has completed the investigations. And so we have some real proof. Right now, all we can say is, well, here's, you know, the Attorney General is doing over 4,000 investigations. We don't know what the result is going to be there. So we may get done and say, oh, there's no problem. Or we may be able to say, look, we've got some real issues here. And then we can deal with that with hard evidence. We don't have right now.
Thanks for the email. The email address again, exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Jennifer's calling from Hanover. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
So just a glance at the headlines in this week shows us that our country is facing this staggering array of public policy problems. And just the state of New Hampshire has many problems that we all talk about very frequently, the environment, education, unemployment. I mean, we could make a whole long list of problems that have been clearly identified as something that we really need our lawmakers to pay attention to. And what I'm really troubled with is that this so-called problem of voter impersonation fraud has not been identified as a clear problem. Every bit of empirical data that we have shows that it's not a problem. And even Representative Jasper a few minutes ago said, well, we don't really know what the problem is. And so, speaking as a voter, I want our political leaders to go into office to solve the problems that we face.
So, bigger fish to fry, in your opinion, Jennifer. What do you think, Representative Jasper?
Well, I think there's certainly a lot of truth in that, but a lot of the issues she spoke about are something the New Hampshire legislature has no control over. But the reality is this isn't our focus as a legislature. We were invited on here today. We're dealing with 900 bills, 800 and something bills this year. So we are addressing, you know, any number of issues. This just happens to be the one that has really gotten a lot of attention.
All right. Well, Jennifer, thanks for the call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477, email exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, we've talked a couple times already about how the Secretary of State's office has been following up after the elections of 2012 on this law. And joining us now is Dave Scanlon, Deputy Secretary of State. As I said, his office oversees elections and election laws. And Dave Scanlon, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
It's nice to be here. Good morning.
Well, 6 months after the November elections, hard to believe. What remains to be settled for you folks?
Well, the part of the requirement of the voter ID law after the November election was to send out a verification mailing to those voters that filled out an affidavit in order to obtain a ballot.
So they didn't have an ID, but they swore on this affidavit that they were indeed Joe Smith.
That's right.
Okay.
And so we had, our office had 60 days after the election to compile the list of those voters that filled out an affidavit to obtain a ballot. And at the end of that 60 days, we had to send a verification mailing out to each of those voters. The verification mailing included a letter thanking the voter for voting, but also said that if the voter did not in fact vote, that they were to contact either this office or the Attorney General's office. And we also had a postcard that was self-addressed and postage paid for them to sign their name and drop into the mail confirming that they did in fact vote in the last election. The voter had 90 days from that date to respond with the postcard mailing. The 90 days was up on April 7th of this month. And so of the 5,609 voters that filled out an affidavit to obtain a ballot, there were 1,698 that did not respond either affirmatively by sending a postcard or having their verification mailing returned back to us as undeliverable as addressed. So those 1,698 names were submitted to the Attorney General's office within days after the April 7th deadline, and now it is their responsibility to follow up on each one of those.
Wow, how much time and energy and money is this taking you, Dave Scanlon?
Well, it is the follow-up on our part was incorporated into the budget that we had. There were no surprises, really, in terms of that. I think the cost that will be involved will be incurred by the Attorney General's office in terms of the follow-up that they need to do that. Some of the follow-up may be relatively simple. If they can make a simple phone call and contact the voter and confirm that way that the vote was in fact legitimate, that could be fairly quick. But if they have to spend time and resources sending investigators out in the field to try and track down each of those voters, that could become very involved.
So is there an estimate as to how much this costs the state overall, not just your office, but the AG's office and the cities and towns?
From our standpoint, we came up with costs of doing the mailings and incorporated that in the fiscal note when the bill passed. I don't exactly remember what that dollar amount was, but we were within that limit. In terms of the AG's office, they really need to speak for themselves on what they anticipate their actual cost to be versus what they anticipated.
So what was the biggest outstanding issue from these affidavits, David Scanlon? Was it that people couldn't prove who they were or who they said they were? Was it that they couldn't prove that they were actually a resident of a given ward or a given town? What was the biggest problem that people had?
Well, in terms of the November 2012 election and this law, things really went smoothly as far as the voter ID law was concerned. There was the number that filled out an affidavit to obtain a ballot was roughly 0.75% of the voters. And we know that some of those were individuals that were simply protesting the new law and refused to show their ID. Others really forgot their ID or did not have one. And so the fallback to make sure that everybody was able to vote was to have an affidavit available for the voter to sign so they would not have to leave the polling place to go locate an ID or worse, leave the polling place without voting because they did not have an ID. There was this fail-safe of the affidavit that voters could fill out to be able to vote. So that process went well. The process of following up with those voters to fill out the affidavit really has gone smoothly. We have had a round of municipal elections since the last state elections. The voter ID requirement was in place for those elections as well, and we heard no problems at the polling place related to that. There will be a round of follow-up mailings as a result of the municipal elections as well, but we haven't hit that phase yet.
So, okay.
So in terms of the current voter ID law, things really seem to be working quite well, subject to any issues that the Attorney General's office has in their follow-up.
Do you have concerns about the coming phase two, Dave Scanlon, and what that might mean for your office, where, unless the law is changed, the affidavit process will be, I don't know how else to put it, tightened up. You'll have to have a photo taken, and the list of acceptable IDs will be shortened. Do you have concerns about that as somebody who runs elections?
Well, we are prepared to follow through on phase two of the law it will be a lot more involved than phase one because it will require the purchase of digital cameras and printing equipment for the polling places in time for the city elections this fall. And so there is going to be, we have a procurement process that will have to take place. We will have to distribute the equipment. We will have to train the local election officials on the use of the equipment. We'll have to put in inventory controls, things like that. And then we will also have to deal with fewer acceptable forms of ID and the training and education that will go along with that. We've felt right along that the more you reduce the acceptable forms of ID, the more voters that you're going to have showing up at the polling place that do not have an acceptable form of ID. And so there are a lot more issues and logistics to work through to implement phase two than we've had to deal with in the past.
All right. Dave Scanlon, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
That's Dave Scanlon, Deputy Secretary of State. His office oversees elections and election laws. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, let's go right back to our listeners. And Ed's been waiting in Campton. Hi, Ed. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Can you hear me?
Sure can, Ed. Go ahead.
Yeah. I just wanted to make just a quick comment. I was born and raised in Boston, but I lived 25 years out of the country, 18 years in Germany, and later 7 years in Puerto Rico, which is part of the U.S. And I find this is probably the only country on the planet that does not require voter ID laws. But having lived in Puerto Rico, part of the United States, if you compared Puerto Rico to a state, it would be one of the poorest states in the country. Yet everybody down there has a voter ID, an election card, and everybody down there votes. I lived in the interior in a very rural area, and nobody had cars. Public transportation was minimal at best, yet everybody had an ID, and everybody voted. And I just wonder, why is it a problem in this country to show an ID when one votes? I find it stunning that I did not have to show an ID when I voted here when I came back.
All right. Ed, thanks a lot for calling. What's your perspective on that, Senator Pierce?
Well, again, I think the consensus that's been coalescing since the November elections is that the phase one part of this bill worked. To the extent that you accept the premise that there is a problem, which I never have because of the testimony, nonetheless, phase one worked. And so showing an ID has not been shown to be a problem. Again, I think we need to focus on phase two and the suppressive effort effect that phase two is going to have.
All right. More after a short break. Ed, thanks for that call. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and Comcast Business Class, provider of internet, voice, TV, and Ethernet solutions that keep pace with the growth of your business. More information at business.comcast.com. And Enfield Shaker Museum presenting the Spring Shaker Forum, a weekend of lectures, tours, and a special viewing of their newest exhibit starting Friday, April 26th. ShakerMuseum.org. Good morning. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
I'm Todd Bookman, health reporter for New Hampshire Public Radio. Health is really a bit of everything. It's science, research, life, death, doctors, the aches and pains of insurance and reform. It really touches every part of our lives. As health reporter, my job is to explore how we're impacted by a changing landscape, by advancements in technology, by shifts in policy, the struggles each of us face really to live healthier lives.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. Email us your thoughts on the top stories of the week at exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9 for the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Today, should New Hampshire pull back on some of the tougher provisions in its new voter ID law? Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. With us in the studio, two gentlemen who've worked on election law issues for a long time, Senator David Pierce, a Democrat from Aetna, and Sean Jasper, a Republican representative from Hudson. One more time, that exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Gentlemen, let's go right back to our callers. Don's calling from Hanover. Hi, Don. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, it's John.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, John.
That's okay. My concern is with phase two. I'm 72 years old, and the only state ID I have is the driver's license. It's quite conceivable that within the next 2 or 3 years, I may no longer have a driver's license. And then if my understanding is, the only state ID I can get still is that would be at a motor vehicle bureau. My closest motor vehicle bureau, I think, is Claremont, which is, what, 30, 44 miles away. I've got no way to get there to get this ID. I'm being disenfranchised.
You know, this is something that has come up, Representative Jasper. Elderly people, especially those who are not driving anymore or getting ready to not drive like Don, are really worried about this. What do you say to him?
Well, that's why I support not caring about the expiration. If you have a driver's license.
Even if it's old.
Even if it's old. As long as you can look at the picture. And for instance, my father, who just passed away at 89, you could have looked at his driver's license from 1965. And you would have known it was him. So as long as you have some sort of picture ID that you can tell it's that person, I'm fine with that because all it is doing is matching a name to a face.
And is that what the law says, John's old ID would still be okay?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I don't think we use it. And if we don't, then that's another. Yeah, it does say regardless of expiration. So his situation is covered.
All right. You're all good, Don. Did you want to jump in there, Senator Pierce?
Yeah, and that's a particular problem for elderly, as John mentioned, is that under Phase 1, which is supported by both of us, if you walk into the polling place where you've been voting for 50 years and the ballot clerk recognizes you, then that is a sufficient form of proof of your identity.
Even if you don't have
an ID. Even if you have nothing. Phase 2 takes that away. So let's say, for instance, the ballot clerk is married to a voter that comes in and the husband says, I need my ballot. And she said, sorry, personal recognition is not a way of doing this anymore. I need your driver's license. And he says, woman, you know I don't drive. I've been driving for 20 years. If under phase two, that voter would not be able to vote unless they signed an affidavit.
Or they still have that ancient driver's license.
Well, no. Under phase two, they take away unless expired. It has to be under phase two. It has to be a current driver's license.
I see. So it gets tighter. And I know
right.
You agree on the phase one, Representative Jasper, list of valid IDs. What about that personal recognition that is currently allowed but under phase two will not be allowed?
I've always thought taking away the personal recognition was ridiculous for exactly the reason that Senator Pierce just talked about.
So I'm hearing a lot of common ground from you guys, actually. I wonder what you think, Representative Jasper. Will your Republican colleagues in the Senate agree with this proposal that Senator Pierce supports, which is let's stop at phase one. Let's not go into the tougher new world here.
I think they will on this part of it. We come down to two issues that remain that keep us apart. And one is phase two requires taking of pictures of people who come to obtain a ballot but don't have an ID. They would have their picture taken. That's the wrong place to be taking the picture. My amendment would have moved that to the registration. When somebody comes in and doesn't have an ID, then we would just snap their picture. Because otherwise, we have no trail of any kind if they don't have any of the required identification. So that's an issue where I think it makes more sense, because it makes no sense to allow somebody to come in, register to vote, then move them to get a ballot, and they say, oh, but now you have to go to have your picture taken. I never understood that. The second issue is one that was in the law, was taken out, was put back. It's a notification to people that when they're registering to vote, they are subject to all the laws of the state of New Hampshire, including motor vehicle laws. This is a fundamental disagreement. Unfortunately, that language should have been left for a separate bill, in my opinion, and not gotten tangled up in this.
Sounds like a lot of things are in flux here then still.
Well, two issues primarily.
Yeah. All right. Back to our listeners. And Mike is calling in from Londonderry. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Good morning, Senator Pierce. Good morning, Congressman Jasper. I'm actually surprised that Senator Pierce was saying that there was a lot of fraud before, or there was no fraud before the voter registration ID. How could you prove it that there was no fraud if you don't have anything to check?
So,
as you could tell, I'm a naturalized citizen. And I'm really surprised that I just walk in and says, yeah, I'm eligible to vote. How do you know that I'm eligible to vote?
So in your home country, Mike, where you were brought up,
absolutely.
You had to show an ID?
Absolutely. Actually, like I said, I lived in other European countries as well. And almost every country that I've been to, that I've talked to the people there, it's just you don't even think about it. You go to vote and you have your voter ID. You have some sort of ID.
Okay. Mike, thanks a lot for calling in. What do you think, Senator Pierce?
Well, I think we need to, again, bring it back to the point that Sean and I are finding common ground on phase one. What we're talking about is phase two and the suppressive effect of phase two. What the gentleman is talking about is how could I possibly say there's no fraud? And what I said was that the Attorney General's office and the Secretary of State's office have consistently testified over the years that there are no cases, there is no rampant voter impersonation fraud, that there are many points in the election process through which fraud can be perpetrated. Impersonation fraud is not one of those places. And so it's not my assessment that I'm repeating. It's the assessment of those who are charged with enforcing the laws. Now, the caller's argument dovetails very nicely with Sean's usual argument that how can you tell if there's fraud if you're not looking for it? But the thing is that there have been a few cases here and there. There's a case of a son who voted in the name of the father in order to get his ballot cast for George Bush. We had the made-up fraud of James O'Keefe. But
people posing as dead voters.
Yeah, but interestingly, was caught in the net without a voter without a photo ID requirement. And so the evidence that we have, rather than the speculation, rather than the perception, the evidence that we have of impersonation fraud is zero.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. And let's go next to Lee. Robert is on the line. Hi, Robert. Go ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give the perspective of one who has an ID, chose not to show it or respond to the follow-up letters with apologies to the Attorney General. As a protest, because, again, I feel this has everything to do with voter suppression and nothing to do with voter fraud. The other thing I'd like to make a comment on is the folks have been stating that phase one was effective. How do they know, how can they evaluate how many people didn't show up at the polls because they were intimidated, they were poor, basically disenfranchised, elderly people in nursing homes who perhaps did not have IDs and simply did not show up to vote.
Robert, can I ask you a real quick question? I do want to talk about that intimidation factor, so thanks for raising it. So what did you do then? You went to vote,
I
refused
to
show ID, you signed an affidavit, is that right?
I signed the affidavit.
Yeah, but now you're not...
I voted. Everyone was very nice. I apologize for being a pain in the neck. But I went ahead and voted. I knew I was going to get the follow-ups. Again, as a protest, I did not send them back.
What do you think about the idea that by not sending them back, you are perhaps creating the perception that there is voter fraud? Because, there's Robert, he didn't return
that
it.
That just occurred to me. But I assume that if the Attorney General is going to call my home and check, I will be checked off as a valid voter, so that in the final statistic of those 5,000 who did not show voter ID, I would not be counted as someone who was fraudulent.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling in, Robert. Real interesting to hear his story. And what do you think, Representative Jasper, this broader idea of, okay, maybe there wasn't a problem at the polls and maybe everybody who had an ID was allowed to vote, but this broader concern he has about intimidation, people not even bothering to show up because they're worried they don't have an ID, they're worried somebody's going to hassle them.
Well, I think all you have to do is look at the fact that over 100,000 new voters showed up to vote on Election Day. I think that shows, can you say, there were 10 people that didn't show up, because that was just unheard of numbers. I saw lines in my town that have never existed before that were hours long to register to vote, first-time registrants. We had over 1,200 people in Hudson, nearly 10% of the checklist, 8% of the checklist, something like that, added on that day. So I think that argument goes away when you look at the numbers of how many people showed up. We had something like over 20,000 people in the state of New Hampshire of that 100,000 signing affidavits for various reasons. Over 13,000 of those were just for addresses. Now, those cards are not being followed up on, but they're in that category alone, and this is where it's very interesting. You've given your address on day one, over 13,000 sent out, about 1,100 from that category were returned as undeliverable.
So people aren't living where they
say. There were 1,100 people that for some reason they gave an address in 60 days that couldn't be delivered.
Let's talk about this issue of intimidation, suppression. You mentioned earlier, Senator Pierce, looking back over the materials from before the election, Democrats nationally were worried about these bills sponsored by Republicans. There was a huge concern that these voter ID bills were going to suppress the Democratic vote. In the end, that didn't happen. Barack Obama won pretty handily. Democrats did pretty well, both here in the state and at the national level. So all those fears, were they overblown, that people would be intimidated or they'd be suppressed?
I think what you had happen was a voter backlash against these voter ID laws when they saw their right to vote, their right to participate in democracy, being threatened by these voter ID laws. I think there was a backlash, and that's probably why turnout was high. In fact, the turnout in the last two presidential elections in 2008 and 2012, it was almost, in New Hampshire, it was almost exactly the same. 720,000 votes, I think, were cast in both 08 and 12. So if you look at just those numbers, it is difficult to say whether there is a suppressive effort or intimidation effort or effect, excuse me. But that, again, that's something we can't know because we can't prove the negative of who did not show up. I think the data that we have shows that there was probably very little because the turnout was almost exactly the same. Now, would it have been higher without the voter ID law? There's just no way to know. And that, but I, even though the numbers don't bear that out, and even though nonetheless, it is impossible to prove. And so I think the risk of intimidating the vote, of suppressing the vote, is a risk too great to keep on with phase two of this law.
Well, Robert, thanks a lot for the call. Real interesting to hear from a protest voter, so I appreciate you joining us. And, gentlemen, we have just about 2 minutes left. And I did want to ask you, Senator Pierce, I asked Representative Jasper earlier, what do you think is going to happen in the Senate with this effort, this bill that you support, that would stop the voter ID law at phase one, where, you know, you need to bring an ID, but there are a number of ways to work with that?
It's my sense, and it's just been anecdotal conversations I've had with various people, is that they are going to the Republican Senate, and the breakdown is 13 to 11 in the Senate, that the Republican Senate will keep most of the phase one list of IDs, but they are specifically targeting student IDs for exclusion. They want to take student IDs out of the mix. They do not want students voting. That's been a long time crusade of a lot of people in the Republican Party, and that's what I've heard. Whether that bears out or not, I don't know how that's going to do. But there are many Republicans, reasonably minded Republicans like Sean in the House, that are also in the Senate and recognize that shortening the list of acceptable forms of proof of identity will only go to suppress the vote.
So you'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
I hate to use this because it's overused, but cautiously optimistic.
Cautiously optimistic, yes.
What's a perfect world for you, Representative Jasper, in terms of the perfect voter ID bill?
Well, I think if we keep phase one in terms of the current ID.
The list.
We take pictures of people who don't have proof of identity at the registration and then keep in the notification to people that if you're registering to vote and declaring New Hampshire as your domicile, that you are subject to the laws of the state of New Hampshire. Because there are a lot of actual problems with particularly students being told they can register to vote and then later finding out that they've created problems with scholarships at home, with their car registrations, with their driver's license. We need to put them on notice that these are the laws. That's the fact. And some people don't want to recognize the fact that the law says if you are saying New Hampshire is your domicile and you're a resident of New Hampshire
to vote,
then you have a driver's license. Within 60 days of that declaration, you have to get a New Hampshire's driver's license. You have to register your car in New Hampshire. These people need to know those are the facts. And for some reason, there are people on the other side of the aisle who don't think that's got anything to do with it. And yeah, that's the law, but we don't need to tell them when they register to vote.
I see. So maybe a whole other discussion at some point is on student voting, because this seems to be the rub. Real short, Senator Pierce.
And those requirements about putting it on the registration form have been found unconstitutional by the New Hampshire courts. And that case is pending before the Supreme Court right now.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for being here. Representative Jasper, good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Sean Jasper, Republican State Representative from Hudson. And Senator Pierce, thank you also.
Thank you very much.
Senator David Pierce, Democratic State Senator from Edna. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.